From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life.
I'm Pete Stoughton.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
Whether your mental or physical wellness brings you to the top of the highest peaks,
or you need a little help with the climb,
The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch.
My first guest this morning is Michelle Kelly. She's a local Park City mental health therapist. She specializes in sex therapy, trauma therapy, and holistic health. And she focuses on getting her clients to POW, that is, a place of optimal wellness. That's the name of her new practice in Park City, POW therapy. Many of us have also heard of EMDA. What is it and how does it work? How can clients achieve optimal wellness while on their healing journey? Welcome to The Mountain Life, Michelle. It's great to have you.
Thank you, Lynn. And I think you're referring to EMDR.
Did I say EMDA?
Yes.
EMDR. Okay, well, let's start there.
Okay.
EMDR, it's, you know, I can't even think of what it stands for. I've had a little bit of it in therapy. It's a very curious, but people say it is an amazing an effective therapy, EMDR.
Yes.
Eye movement, something, something.
Yes. So it stands for eye movement desensitization reprocessing, which is a mouthful. It is an absolutely beautiful, beautiful therapy. So my favorite part of EMDR therapy is all of the healing, all of the insight. Everything that you gain from the process comes from within. So the therapist is a facilitator of it, but all of the healing comes from within and it taps into our natural ability to heal. EMDR has been around for over 30 years. And when it was first kind of created and discovered, the eye movement piece was it is an important piece, but the real purpose of the eye movements, and nowadays it's not just eye movements. It's any form of bilateral stimulation, meaning when the right and left hemispheres of the brain are activated so that the brain can be more integrated and working together while you're processing your trauma. So any form of bilateral stimulation, whether it's walking or biking or hiking, and in EMDR therapy, it's usually eye movements or TheraTappers, where a client might hold TheraTappers in their hand, they get a vibration right, left, right, left, right, left. You know, it's allowing that left and right hemispheres of the brain to integrate so that you can actually process your trauma. Because when we're triggered, our body is telling us there's a threat when there's no real threat generally, right? So post-traumatic stress disorder is when your body has not made peace with the experience and it's reacting as if the experience is occurring in the present moment.
Mm-hmm.
So your body is responding to any type of cue or stimuli that resembles the original trauma, and it's telling you that there's a threat when the threat is past.
Okay, so what is it about connecting the left and right side of the brain to then be able to process that trauma? What does it do? Does it unleash the trauma? Does it bring it to your conscious mind where maybe it's been repressed and hanging out in your subconscious?
Mm-hmm. So when we're triggered, the fight, flight, freeze, fawn response in our brain, the amygdala, is activated, right? It comes to the surface and it is taking over. It's almost like it's the only part of the brain that's online and it's just pumping. You know, I mean, the symptoms that come up when we're triggered with trauma are really scary. And sometimes they're subtle. You know, sometimes they're subtle. We might, for example, blow up at our spouse and not know where it's coming from. And we're thinking the threat's in the present, but it's really something from the past. So when we're in talk therapy instead of EMDR therapy, in talk therapy, sometimes we bring up that trauma and we talk about it, but we don't feel like we have resolution. So I've worked with clients who've been in therapy for 5, 10, 20 years, and they've been like, I've been talking about my trauma, but I still feel horrible.
Mm-hmm.
So the purpose of the bilateral stimulation is that it allows more of your brain to be online so that you can process. Because when our amygdala is the only part of the brain that's really pumping or running the show, we can't process. So we can't take in new information and learn and integrate and process unless that prefrontal cortex, the rational decision part of our brain, is online. So the bilateral stimulation, and this is theory, of course, the bilateral stimulation allows that prefrontal to come that prefrontal cortex to come online so that you can actually process the trauma.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about repressed memories, how we can store memories and we have a really hard time even remembering what happened to us. Mm-hmm. And there's also something, you'll probably tell me the right name for it, but it's when we have an incorrect repressed memory. We sort of remember something this way, barely a little bit, but maybe it's something that didn't even happen, or it happened in such a different fashion that it, you know, maybe, and it all ties into how we perceive trauma or lack of trauma.
Yeah. So memory is fascinating. Our brain is just so incredible. But so another thing I love about EMDR therapy is it taps into four different ways that we store memory. When we think of memory, we usually think about something that I can actually recall. You know, I can see the images, I can tell you the story, the narrative of what's occurring. But we store memory in four different ways, right? We store memory in images. We store memory in thoughts. What are my thoughts about that experience? We store memory in our emotions, and we store memory in our body sensations. So memory starts forming when we are in the womb. And commonly, you know, we have implicit memory that is driving much of our behavior, and we're not necessarily aware of it. It's unconscious. So if we were to say that our consciousness was an iceberg, we might have access to about 5% of our memory. And then underneath all that is 95%, where our body is just kind of sifting through all the energy and information that we've experienced, and it's making conclusions. And, you know, quite frankly, when we have undigested shame or trauma, our perception of reality is distorted. So you are speaking to, like, sometimes the memory might maybe be presenting itself in a way that it didn't actually happen or whatever.
Because it was so traumatic, or because it affected us on sort of on some, you know, emotional level. And that was going to be my next question. How do we most correctly store memories? How do we most correctly how can we most easily access memories if it is, you know, does it depend on if they're images, thoughts, emotions, or body sensations, or does it just depend on the person?
It absolutely depends on the person, you know, and I would say it's not like a correct way of storing memory, it's a human way of storing memory, you know, so we are all going to process in our own unique ways. Some people, when they come into EMDR, they process really verbally, so they really process a lot through their thoughts. Some people process a lot through their body sensations. Mm-hmm. I mean, when we are in distress, our body is responding to that. So that's commonly where a lot of the implicit memory, that unconscious memory, is coming to the surface. We might not be able to even understand what that body sensation is, but in EMDR therapy, that body sensation is absolutely just as important as a thought or an image or the narrative, because that body sensation is telling us a story, and we might not even have words to put to it. Mm-hmm. You know, but the fact that your body's giving you that sensation is important. So all information that comes up in EMDR therapy gets the same weight in terms of image, thought, emotion, or body sensation. And in my opinion, EMDR therapy is a form of mindfulness, because you're allowing whatever information is coming up to the surface to be there so that you can move through it. Because when we avoid our pain or our trauma, it's almost like that energy gets stuck and trapped in our body, and then it manifests in all sorts of different ways: depression, anxiety, PTSD, anger, shutdown, withdrawal, isolation. So being able to approach the trauma and feel it to heal it is kind of the phrase you'll hear a lot. Being able to feel it so that you can move through it and make peace with it.
It's interesting that our bodies are complex and advanced enough to be able to store those memories and in essence protect us from them, but it's not quite complex and advanced enough to help us just process them so that we don't end up with that laundry list of depression, anxiety, so on and so forth.
And I do believe part of that is cultural. Like, I believe our body has the natural ability to heal. You know, if I fall and I scratch my knee, My body knows exactly what to do to heal. I don't have to tell it what to do.
Right.
I believe we're capable of that with emotional wounds as well. We just aren't always raised in an environment where it's safe to do that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If you're just joining me on The Mountain Life, my guest is Michelle Kelly. She's a local Park City mental health therapist. Her practice is called POW Therapy, and POW stands for Place of Optimal Wellness. I wanted to ask you, Michelle, because we talked in the green room a bit about you, you are a sex therapist as well. I think people, you know, all over have issues with sex. They don't know how to put their finger on it. They would be interested in learning more. They're shy to go pick up a book at the local bookstore and read about it, or even go online and look it up, because then you start getting all the algorithms just would start popping, I don't know, porn into your feed. And so it's something we don't talk about. I was just on a girl's weekend, and I thought, and we talked a lot about it, and I thought, I have not talked about this stuff for decades, and it was very cathartic and very healing. Why don't we, you know, who comes for sex therapy, and how do you know when it's time to go?
Yeah, so sexual health is relevant for the duration of our lifespan. And you are 100% correct that sex is such a confusing topic, because on one hand, it's taboo, right? I mean, we are human beings, and it is just such a natural part of our human experience. But it's not talked about in a way that allows us to understand what it means for us. You know, I mean, it's so unique for every different human being. And it shows up differently in our lives depending on our life experiences, our trauma, our family history. And then you have a culture that's romanticizing it, but also saying don't talk about it, you know? So it gets really confusing to know, well, where's a safe place to really explore and understand how I feel about this? And how do I address it if I'm distressed about it, whether with myself or in my relationship? And so many people have difficulties in their relationships with their sexuality because they haven't been taught to discuss it, you know? And then how do you approach it with your partner? And it can be a really scary topic. And individuals, basically, sex therapy is going to be useful for anybody who's experiencing distress with their sexuality.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's so interesting that we started off by talking about EMDR and trauma. You know, the statistic, the very, very tragic statistic, is that 1 in 4 women, 1 in 6 men have had past sexual abuse of some sort. That's a lot of trauma, a lot of trauma. Some of us wouldn't even know if we had had it, right? If it was perpetrated when we were very, very young. Talk a little bit about that, connecting something like EMDR and your past trauma.
Yeah, so sexual trauma comes in a variety. It shows up in a variety of different ways. I guess what I mean to say is sexual trauma is on a spectrum. I've got a wonderful blog on my website. It basically says, what is sexual trauma? You can go to powtherapy.com if you want to learn more about that. But it's going to talk about that spectrum where there's maybe subtle forms of sexual trauma, such as shame around sexuality. You're taught that it's not okay to touch your own body when you're a little kid, or you have influences from religion and different, you know, cultural influences that are shaming you about sexuality or teaching that it's not okay, or it's bad, or it's dirty. And then you get married and it's supposed to be okay, but you have no idea what to do with it, right? So that might be a subtle form, but for some people that's an excruciating form of sexual trauma. And then there's also sexual assault, mm-hmm. which is obviously extremely traumatic. Before I started my private practice, I worked for a nonprofit organization called the Unique Foundation, YOUNIQUE, Unique Foundation. They're amazing. All of their services are free, and they serve female survivors of childhood sexual abuse. And this is really what prompted me to interweave trauma therapy with sex therapy, because we would do a sexual health class with these women when they came to the retreat. So the Unique Foundation offers a free retreat. It's 4 days. They have one in Utah and one in Georgia, and it's 5-star retreat and 100% free. It's amazing. But we would teach them, you know, a sexual health. We would have a sexual health course, and these women are saying, I have been in therapy for so long and no one's talking about this. My therapist hasn't even brought up the topic, but they're suffering with their sexual intimacy. And so being able to interweave that trauma therapy with a sex therapy has been so healing. And when couples come in for sex therapy, they're really usually thinking, okay, we got to look at this problem that we're suffering with many people. It might look like desire discrepancy. One partner has desire that feels really high, the other one is low, and they're having this discrepancy. And I mean, there's so many reasons people would come in, but that's a really common one. And they're generally looking at that as the problem. And then as we work deeper together, and I invite them to engage in EMDR, both of them individually, they start to get to some deeper relational issues and, you know, family history issues and even their own trauma that's influencing their ability to communicate about that topic and effectively navigate it.
Desire discrepancy. That is a very good little useful term.
It's huge.
It is huge. And so desire discrepancy is reason enough to come in and talk to you about it.
Absolutely, because so many couples are just like, I call it the silent sufferer. You know, it's like you might be able to engage in this beautiful world in so many different ways, and then there's this piece of life where you're suffering and you do not know how to approach it. Mm. So I'm in the process of creating some other really cool things, and one of that is a course, Liberated Intimacy. And so the goal is to go from that silent sufferer to feel more liberated in intimacy, being able to show up authentically and whole and healthy and have safe communication and feel comfortable and confident and pleasurable, you know, in your sexual intimacy relationships.
POWtherapy.com, POW. I was just thinking that even in the regular everyday intimacy, one person loves touch, the other person doesn't really love touch. I think it probably has to do with how you were raised. I was raised in a family of huggers and touchers, and you know, you don't know necessarily. Some people are raised with hardly any touch, which is very sad and unfortunate. But, and who knows, maybe they grow up and they want touch, or maybe they don't want touch. And it's a, like you say, it's just a crazy spectrum out there of what's going on. But so most of the people that you deal with, I mean, would you say that desire discrepancy, I mean, it could relate to libido. Do you work with libido? Mm-hmm,
absolutely. Absolutely. There's so many different reasons why somebody's libido could be impacted. I mean, there's perimenopause and menopause. There's, you know, psychotropic medication. So people, or even just any form of medication, not any form, but many forms of medication are going to affect your libido, your lifestyle, what you're putting in your body, what you're choosing to eat and drink affects your libido. I mean, there's so many different things that affect it. Chronic illness. There's so many things that affect it. And absolutely, I do work with that. And that's one of the reasons why I partner with the Amen Clinics. Mm-hmm. Not only Amen Clinics, but my goal is to create an incredible referral base so that my clients can have access to the best providers in not only Park City, but, you know, in Utah, wherever they're located.
What do the Amen Clinics do? I've heard that name a lot. I believe I've interviewed Daniel Amen before on this show. You know, what are they all about? They're across the country.
Yeah, so I am so happy to be partnering with the Amen Clinics because they are really trailblazers in the world of psychiatry. I mean, historically and even present day, many psychiatrists are, I guess you could say, I don't want to like offend, but sometimes guessing what medication is going to be best for the client, you know, and I'm not a prescriber. That's why I work with the Amen Clinics and other prescribers. But the Amen Clinics, what they do is they do SPECT scan imaging, where they actually look at the organ we're treating. So all other medical providers look at the organ we're treating. Mental health clinicians, psychiatrists often don't even look at the organ that we're treating, which is the brain. Mm. You know, so the Amen Clinics is incredible. They have done over 90,000 SPECT scans from individuals from 111 countries. And what they're discovering and continue to discover is, for example, depression and anxiety, there's 7 different types of depression and anxiety, and you see them differently on the SPECT scans.
Whoa. What does SPECT stand for?
Well, I don't know exactly what SPECT stands for. It's a type of imaging.
It's like an MRI.
Functional imaging.
Oh, it's functional MRI. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But So it's fascinating because they can actually see on those brain scans what parts of the brain are overactive or underactive, and then prescribe or whatever it prescribe the best treatment plan based on what they're seeing. So you don't want to commonly, if you go into a prescriber and you say, I have depression, they're going to give you an antidepressant and kind of hope and guess how your body's going to respond. But when you have the actual image, you can target that treatment. And the Amen Clinic is always going to go with the least toxic interventions first in terms of nutrition and supplements and lifestyle changes, and then utilize medication as needed.
Very interesting. Michelle Kelly, unfortunately, we're out of time. It's wonderful speaking with you. She is a local Park City mental health therapist, powtherapy.com. She specializes in sex therapy, trauma therapy, and holistic health. It's been a pleasure speaking
with you. Thank you. Thank you for having me, Lynn.
It's been great. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of The Mountain Life.
If you enjoyed the show, make sure you subscribe, rate us, and leave us a comment.
If you have an idea for a future show, email us at mountainlife@kpcw.org.
We hope you'll bring your green smoothie and join us next week for The Mountain Life.